All right, guys, it is that time. We are live on the Rickon YouTube channel. And today I'm talking about the seven things I wish I knew before I started wholesaling. And I got to be honest with you, I've collected these seven things probably in my first 10 years of wholesaling. And honestly, it came back to remind me for my last 10 years of wholesaling. So if you want to get a head start and you want to learn from my mistakes, this is going to be the perfect video for you guys. My name is Rickon. I've been wholesaling 21 years. And the reason I do this channel is to inspire you to get started in wholesaling, to show you actually how to do it, and to tell you it is actually a lot simpler than you think. Most people way overcomplicate this. So two ways to connect with me. You got the comment section. Drop your name in there. Let me know what market you're doing, what you're up to. Let me know if you're just getting started. Just give an introduction. You'd be surprised the amount of people that you can meet in these live streams. Why not? Everyone's here for the same reason, for wholesaling. Also, I put a link in the comments under Rickon if you want to join that. You want to do a one-on-one, you want to talk and connect. I do it 100% absolutely free, and that is a great place to connect with me. So without further ado, let's jump into it. The seven things I wish I knew before I started wholesaling. Now, I don't have a order of sequence or anything like that. But every one of these things, if you can resonate, I had to narrow down the seven what I thought were the most important, because honestly, it was like 25, but you guys are only going to retain so much information. So let's take the top seven and we are going to run with them. Now, I actually think I'm going to do one of the most important ones. Actually, let's just jump into it. You ready? You don't need a real estate license to wholesale. Now, thank God I never got my real estate license. But even all the way back in 2003, the early part of 2003, everyone's like, you should get your license, Rick. It's going to make you a more legit wholesaler. Honestly, here I am 20 years later, actually 21 years later. I never got a real estate license. And honestly, I kiss the ground every day I didn't get it. Why? Because honestly, getting your license puts you in a much worse position as a wholesaler. Number one, you have a higher level of disclosures. All your marketing material, your bandit signs, your direct mail, your business cards. Every time you cold call someone, every time you SMS somebody, you have to disclose that you are a licensed realtor. Honestly, it's like a kick in the teeth. It's going to kill your marketing. I'm not saying you can't do it. It's just why? If I want to be a licensed electrician, why would I go get a real estate license? And wholesaling is the same thing. Most people think they're covering themselves from doing something. You're not. You're actually creating a new set of liabilities for you. And here's the best part is, not only are you going to pay between $2,500 and $4,000 a year for MLS access, errors and omissions insurance, and you're going to have a boss that doesn't understand what you do, and doesn't understand why you're not collecting commissions, you're collecting assignments, and they're going to find a way to tax you on that eventually, I promise you. You get a boss. And if you want to be an entrepreneur, why'd you go out there? You can go get a boss they're going to inspire you, motivate you. They don't know wholesaling. And for that reason, the next reason why people try to get their real estate license, actually there's multiple reasons, is, well, Rick, I can do both. I could be a real estate agent. So if they just need to list their house, I can do that and get the commissions, or I can buy their house. Well, guess what? If that transaction goes south or there's a misunderstanding, guess which shoes you fit into. You are the bona fide licensed real estate agent. I don't care what you sign with that homeowner. And at the end of the day, you're going to be held to a higher standard. Now, when I say higher standards, don't get me wrong. Real estate agents are no different than you and me, regular people. But the license has requirements. And so first thing is, I believe you have to be 18 years of age. So if you're under 18, don't even consider getting a real estate license, because they don't think you're worthy of it. You're not smart enough for us. Give me a break. Number two, if you have any type of criminal record, you're out. Gone. There are exceptions, but you have to prove yourself. You have to do all this stuff. Honestly, people make mistakes. It's ridiculous that you think somebody... Honestly, I've met more licensed real estate agents that I prefer to work with wholesalers any day of the week. So you got that going. Number two, you have to have a high school diploma. I've already told you your education doesn't matter in real estate, especially in wholesaling. Honestly, if you guys understand how I feel about the whole education system, it is pro-sided, one-sided for you to become an employee. So you get a job and you pay your taxes and you follow the government's lead. That's it. You'll be perfect as a realtor if you do that. As a wholesaler, we're completely the opposite. So you have to go get, and even your GED, you have to ask for special permission because they don't think that's as acceptable. You got to be kidding me. Honestly, I've seen people with sixth grade education, some of the richest people I ever met in my life. Your education level, education does help you. I'm not even going to discount that, but it doesn't make you privileged to where you can't do certain things. And that's what drives me nuts about real estate agents. Lastly, there is a collective group of wholesalers that say, listen, you need to become licensed because there's a couple states that it's risky. And if you read the statutes, you'll understand how to navigate through them. I'm not going to go through every state. Me and Zach have done a ton of videos on this. And honestly, there's only one or two states you really got to pay attention to. But for the most part, it is 100% legal to wholesale in 50 states in the United States. Prove me wrong. I'm not going to get into Oklahoma has a slight exception and Illinois. That is it. All the others are nitpicky laws that are easily to navigate around if you understand wholesale. But how many gurus go out there and just instill fear in you guys? Oh my God, you got to get a license. And then once again, guess what? They have a solution for you. You've got to join their brokerage because they're licensed real estate agents. Wonder how that worked. They're supposed to be wholesalers, but they're licensed real estate agents. Oh, and if you work under my brokerage and sign up, which is basically an MLM because they get a spiff from it, and then you go out and recruit others. And if you guys have ever been hammered by your friends that done MLM, God knows I have, somehow it's found its way into real estate and it didn't find its way in the wholesaling. It found its way into the realtor world. And that's what you're seeing now. That's why you're seeing the big push. All they need you to do is sign up. They get a spiff and you keep signing up everybody. It's like an endless recruiting cycle. And everybody makes money on fees. Very few people actually make money on real estate. And then they promise you they're going to make you a bona fide, correctly trained wholesaler. But most of them don't even know how to do it themselves, or they don't do it anymore. They are actually bona fide real estate agents. And that's where you wind up with this quandary. Guys, stop trying to think you get your real estate license. Here's the exception. If you got your real estate license because you actually wanted to get your real estate license and you wanted to get commissions and you decide, that is a bunch of crap. I don't like it. I want to be a wholesaler. I get it if you held both sides. In my opinion, you're almost better off letting it expiring when it goes. It's not the end of the world because, of course, you got to renew it every year. So NAR, which is a National Association of Realtors, which, by the way, is being pursued by the Department of Justice, which is a highly political group anyways, and they're going after them for a monopoly. That's right. A monopoly, and it is completely unfair. It's completely biased. And I don't know whenever it's going to resolve, but I think it's absolutely hysterical, the whole thing. So this clean, reputable system, which spends hundreds of millions of dollars a year using lobbyists to fight off, are being sued by the Department of Justice for unfair practices, basically monopoly of the entire business. And if you guys want to get your license, well, that's fine. If you got your license before and you want to let it expire, or maybe you want to do duality, I kind of get it then. But if you are a bona fide wholesaler, you go and get your real estate license is going to get you in hot water. I have case after case after case. Because when you get your license, if somebody doesn't like what you're doing, which is a lot, because most people don't understand what wholesalers do. They think what we do is illegal because they never took the time to understand it and they don't have the guts to do what we do. They report you to state agencies, federal agencies, their title companies, their other realtors, and even other wholesalers can report you. And guess what? You have to report to a board that is entirely represented by realtors and brokers, and you're probably going to get in trouble. And if it happens over and over again, you got to go find another broker, and it just never stops. Guys, I've watched this time and after time. This is the one decision I actually did right, and I'm telling you, I want you to understand that. Next one. This one's powerful, especially right now. And I'm going to double down on this. Wholesaling works in any market, in all markets. Why? It's wholesaling. I've done it for 21 years. I've never gotten out of it. And if you guys think you're in extreme market now, go back to 2005 and 6. I mean, it was almost off the charts. Like, we saw numbers we never saw. And then 2008-09 came. It was the extreme opposite. It was so extreme opposite. It was the worst down market we've seen in over 100 years. Guess what, guys? I wholesaled the entire time. And here's what people will do. And these are people you must avoid at all costs. When they go, wholesaling doesn't work anymore. It doesn't work. No. Wholesaling always works. You just don't understand how wholesaling works because you were taught by someone that taught you a couple niche techniques that work in a very hot market and they don't work under normal market conditions. That's not really wholesaling. And guys, that's why you're seeing a mass exodus from wholesaling. Just go on Guru. Go look up your favorite gurus from 3 or 4 years ago. They're all, like, most of them are gone. Why? Because what they do doesn't work anymore and they actually don't do the business. And if you understand that, why in the hell would you, like, you almost question, like, why did I follow his or her advice? And here's what they all say. Wholesaling really doesn't work anymore right now. No. You don't know how to work wholesaling. I'll show you every day. Wholesaling has always worked in every market, extreme, up or down. It works in every market. And people that don't understand how to wholesaling, here's what they all say. Wholesaling doesn't work anymore. Just understand that's not a wholesaler. That is what you call an internet marketer. And when their crowd dries up, they're done. They're over with because they got no more income coming in. So make sure you understand this. And especially right now, if you have people that are giving you advice, you talk to people like, well, wholesaling doesn't really work anymore. It is code for they have no idea what they're doing. It makes absolutely no sense. You don't think there's somebody motivated every day to sell some sort of property somewhere in this country. Hands down, 330 million people, you do the math. Guys, don't ever buy into this crap because it's the stupidest argument I've ever heard. Real estate always moves. There's just different market conditions. There's different interest rates. There's different buyers and sellers, but it's always here. The only way you screw yourself in wholesaling is by quitting. And if you quit, I guarantee you're going to be done. Okay, here's a big one. And you guys are just going to have to pony up on this one because I'm looking when I wrote this the other night, I go, my God, these things are such truth. And sometimes I look away from this and I look at it again when I'm doing you guys, I'm like, oh my God, that one's like really hit me in the gut. You ready? Stop trying to look rich. You know what I'm talking about. You guys are driving those really nice lease cars or you rent them. You rent that nice Yukon for the weekend because you want to impress that girl or something like that. Just stop. You're never going to get ahead doing this. Nobody cares how nice of a car you drive. Honestly, we don't even care how nice your home is. The reality is, how do you truly define if somebody's rich? Here's my definition. A rich person is someone that can do whatever they want, has the financial means to make whatever choice they want. It's not about unlimited money, and has freedom of their time to go anywhere in this world they want and still be able to make a living. That is richness, guys. That is it. Because if you just chase money, you will never catch it. Let me give you an example. When I started wholesaling, if I had $300 in my bank account, it was impressive. Okay. That's a college education, everything I was doing, working for corporate America. Why I only have $300? Because I was trying to look rich. I was terrible at it. And honestly, it was beyond exhausting. You know, keeping up with the Joneses, it sucks. And it is a mental thing that society has taught everyone. You've got to look rich. You've got to, what's the word for it? You're trying to be a certain class. And the reality is you're just borrowing it and you have to work harder and harder to get it. And the reality is I go, man, if I could just get like $3,000 in my bank account, just adding a zero to that, I'd be so happy. You guys ever said this? You say it. Like, say it in the comments. If you say it, we say stuff like this all the time. And guess what? I got $3,000 in the bank account. Now I still have my full-time job and I was wholesaling because I had a crap load of debt and I had two young kids. a little Zachy wasn't always this big. And then I got 3,000. I remember telling my wife, I go, gosh, we could just get 10 grand set aside. Now, once I went into wholesaling full time, 10 grand was a piece of cake. It was like, my wife's like, oh my God, like we've never had this much money. I'm here to tell you guys, 10 grand in the scheme, it's not a lot of money. And then it went, okay, if I could get 25,000. And then I remember saying 50. And then I remember saying 100. And then I remember go, man, if we could just put a quarter of a million in it. And then guys, guess what? Can I have $1 million liquid cash? Piece of cake. And I don't say this to impress on you. I'm just saying it is, money is always a moving target. You're never going to hit it. So then the million turns into 5 million, the 10 million, 20, 30. And this is how people get so obsessive. And before you know it, if they hit the goal or they're close to it, they just have no more time left in life. And to me, like I don't want to do that. Honestly, as long as I can make a ton of money and have the choices, do whatever I want, live wherever I want, take care of my family, and I really don't have to work another day, I just choose to work. That is richness, guys. And the only way you're going to get there is start focusing on becoming rich instead of trying to be rich. You see, there is a tremendous difference. And honestly, once you accept it deep in your gut with conviction, you just stop trying to brag with people. Hey, look at my nice boat. Look at this nice car. Look at this. Guys, I want an incredible boat, but boats are a terrible investment. They go down very fast. And honestly, I'm in my empire, like real estate building stage. And I have a plan over the next 3 years and I'm going to hit it. So I do not waste time. I do not drive fancy cars. I am simple. You guys are never going to see me bragging about it because it doesn't matter. If I lived in a trailer that was completely paid off and I had 10 million in the bank, you would never know the difference. But here's the difference is the people that are broke, they're always going to tell you how well they're doing. That's how you know someone's lying to you, by the way. And then the people that just humbly go about their life and just go, okay, I'm happy the where I am. I'm going to get better tomorrow. And that's what I want to do. Guys, just please understand the statement. Stop trying to become rich. Stop trying to be rich. Stop trying to look rich and learn how to become rich because you're going to have to make some sacrifices to do it. And you're going to have to give up on trying to keep up with your neighbors and your friends because it's a joke. They are not happy. They are miserable. They're struggling just to make most of their payments. And once you understand that and you actually talk to some of your friends and family, you'll understand what a plight this. Now, here's a really cool thing is it only takes 2 years to really turn anything around. Honestly, 1 year, 6 months, you can change a lot. In 30 days, you can change it. Everyone's different. But I'm just telling you, if you will absorb the statement, if you can make this fundamental difference, you can massively pivot your life with wholesaling. But here's the problem is I did not take this statement when I started wholesaling. Guess what I did? I just started buying more crap. Oh boy, did I impress the neighbors. But like it all wears off and it got me nowhere. Until I started this to buy assets that actually paid me and I got no real benefit up front other than the tax write-off, the depreciations, which I learned. See, we're in a society where we want instant payoff. We want that nice car. We want that nice boat. We want that fancy jewelry. Cut the crap out, guys. If you can adapt the statement and do wholesaling, my God. But here's the problem is I did wholesaling and I skipped this part and it took me 5 to 7 years to unwind all my debt and actually buy assets that pay myself and I had to educate myself. And that's the journey of wholesaling. It opened up this Pandora box. It's like, how do you become really rich? And you take the proceeds from wholesaling once you get financially set and you start buying things that pay you and your family for the rest of your life. And that's it. People is like, how did you get that? I go, you weren't around the 10 years. I just like, I was buying everything and I just forgot about it. And every day I remind my wife, I remind myself, I go, we're broke. Where are we going to find the money today? We got to go out and find more deals. We got to help more people out. We got to do more JVs and that's how it works. So this is what it ties up on this one. Here's the next one. In order for you to accomplish on not looking rich and becoming rich, you have to do the following. You're going to have to lose your ego. Honestly, if it's the one thing you can take out of wholesaling, trust me on this one. Everybody has one. I've never met someone that doesn't have an ego, so we all have them. Even a Buddhist, even a monk has an ego. and they will talk to you in depth about it. And I implore you to dig deeper into how your ego works. Your ego is your mask. It is your persona. You put on a mask, and it's what you show the world who you think you should be. But the reality, it's not you and you know it. That's why you do this ego. Your ego always wants you to be right. It's extremely selfish and it never listens. So if it's always right, extremely selfish, and it never listens, anytime you're wearing your ego, you can't get ahead in life, business, or with your family. Ego's there to make you feel good right on the spot. So if you understand how business works and you have to have delayed gratification, why wouldn't it work with your ego? You got to take your ego, grab it, and put it in your pocket. Stop trying to interject in every conversation. Stop trying to be right. And stop, for goodness sakes, trying to look rich. Learn how to become rich. The only way you can do it is you absolutely have to lose your ego. It's got to go away. And honestly, if you can grasp this concept, here's a little hint. For those of you that argue with everybody on the internet, stop. It's your ego. It's only your ego, and it's your ego talking, and you look like an idiot when you do it. It's just the truth. I do not argue with people on the internet. Number one, I don't know who they are. I don't know what their credentials are. And most of them are just keyboard warriors. Why people do it is because it gives them instant gratification and they know they're not going to get punched in their mouth. 9 times out of 10, that person would never make that comment in front of the person because they'd scared there'd be repercussions. That's why people are so bold on the internet. It's like, I just think it's kind of funny. So, okay, let's keep moving through this so I can do the one-on-ones on the lives on it. So if we know we got to stop trying to look rich, we want to be rich. To do that, we have to lose our ego. You've got to understand this rule. You ready? Boy, and this one gets a lot of you. God knows it got me. Don't look for the quick fix and the shortcut to wholesaling. Guess what? It doesn't exist. It's bull. It's BS. I could use every slang word on here. You know what I mean? The reason why you guys see the quick fix and the shortcuts, because it sounds really good. And when it sounds really good, these things called marketers, they write up a pitch to solve your biggest problem. But here's the problem is the pitch is amazing. It sounds so perfect. I've bought into it so many times. There's no substance when it gets down to it. And when there's no substance, it means you bought into something. It made you feel good real quick, right? Stop trying to look rich and become rich. Rich people never do this crap, by the way. Number two, your ego got the best of you because the ego says, that'll solve our problem, Rick. Let's do it. And you buy it and whatever you paid, anywhere from $100 to $10,000. Some of you paid $50,000. And then you find in the end, you actually have to do the work. Anyways, it wasn't really a shortcut. And honestly, it doesn't really work. You're seeing MLS. You're seeing, you know, reach out to real estate agents. This will fix everything. Honestly, it's the worst thing you can do as a newbie, as a wholesaler, because you're not a wholesaler. You're a pseudo real estate agent without a license. And at that point, you probably should just go get your license and join a realtor team, because that's not wholesaling. That is not the shortcut. It's not the quick fix. Creative financing is not the end all and solves all wholesaling. Honestly, a wholesaler can do anything with creative financing. A creative finance person that doesn't understand wholesaling is lost. So understand that. Imagine this. If you wanted to learn math and someone goes, listen, you don't need to learn math. It's a bunch of BS. Just jump over to calculus and geometry. That's where the action's at. So when people tell you, you don't have to do the math, you can just go over and do calculus or geometry or trigonometry. You don't have to do that. That's the same person says, why don't you do creative financing? So you have to compete with the wholesalers. Wholesaling is a fundamental skill set to buy properties at a deep discount. And the specialty is learn how to market people, specifically guerrilla marketing. That's like down roots tactics to find deals with little to no money at all. If you can learn that single skill set, I promise you, you can master anything you want to do in real estate. Go out there and find any wholesaler. They can do anything from short sales to fix and flips to landlord properties, giant rental portfolios, apartments. They can absolutely do anything. They do hard money. They do notes. Do it the other way around. They will never figure out wholesaling. You know why? Because almost every one of my cash buyers tries to figure out wholesaling. And after like a month, they go, you know, Rick, it's a lot of work. I'd rather just pay you and do it. So if somebody offers you a quick fix or what they call 2.0 of wholesaling, once again, it is a sexy term. So you reach in your pocket, you pull out your credit card, and you buy a quick fix to give you that adrenaline rush, to give you that dopamine rush, because you're going to fix a problem, only to find out there's no substance. It doesn't work. It worked for like a month or two, but this guy or gal sold it to everybody. Now everyone knows how to do it. And now basically the loophole's been shut down. So whenever there you see a quick fix, I'm telling you guys, there's a reason. Rich people don't do this. They understand everything is work. And to get ahead, you have to separate yourself. If everything was a quick fix and a shortcut, everybody would do it. And that's ultimately what happens with them. So the ones that have success with it, they rely on it so heavily, they usually wind up leaving the business. So I don't want you to do any of that. Okay. I got two more left. You ready? Two more. And then we're jumping on these lives, okay? My God, please stop taking advice from broke people. God knows there's not one person that's short on information on how to get rich. I could go to a homeless camp and they'd probably tell me how to get rich. That's just how people do it. And the biggest people guilty of it is your friends. It doesn't mean you don't love your friends, but please take a look around. You guys know your friends' financial status. And by the way, their financial status is not based on the car they drive or the giant mortgage they have on their house. That's probably the worst way you can look at it. Just look, do they have freedom to do time? And here's a test. I go, hey, you can make it up. You can say, listen, hey, I'm going to go to South America for like 3 weeks in July. It's like 4 or 5 months away. You down with it? Oh, I could never take that kind of time off. Like my boss would fire me or something like that. You see, there's no freedom to do what they want. And everyone's got obligations, but if it's important to me, I'm going to go. If I want to take a month and go off, I've gone to Europe. I've gone to Mexico. I've gone to all sorts of places. I'm getting ready to take some really exotic trips. Why? Because I put 21 years in the wholesaling. I can go when I want. And my staff and all my partners will help me keep everything running while I'm gone. And as long as I have a cell phone connection, a computer, I can do anything I want to do. So stop taking advice from really broke people. They actually mean well, but they don't know how to do it. If you were a baseball player, and I wasn't a great baseball player. I played when I was young, but the sport didn't excite me. If you try to take batting instructions from one of the people sitting in the stands that's never played baseball, you're literally wasting your time. And the thing is, you know you're wasting your time. So why do you do the same thing when people tell you how to get rich, but they go to a 9-to-5 job and they can't rub two nickels together and they only get 2 weeks off a year? You can hear them out, but just don't let it in. Just go, oh, that's interesting. I'll keep that in mind. That's all I say and I move on. Here's the reality. Think about this. If people ever talk about weight loss, what do they want every time? They don't want your story. They don't even know how you did it. They want to know what the secret is. What's the secret? I don't know. I just eat less and I move more. They don't care. They want to know if you have a pill or something that's a shortcut to make it really fast. Guys, the truth is, if you take advice from people, don't take advice from someone that they have not done the journey themselves, period, especially in wholesaling. I can't stress this enough. You've got to understand this. So I got one more, and this is a big one. And this one's going to sink home for you. So here we go. Stop comparing yourself to others, only to you. You'll never win this contest. I promise you. You ready for this? I guarantee someone's doing better than you right now. I guarantee someone's doing better than me. I guarantee someone's doing better than Zach. I guarantee someone's doing worse than Zach. Guarantee someone's doing, it never stops. A comparison's always a status. How can I get my status up? And if you let your success or the outcome of your day or your attitude depend on what some stranger you don't even know on the internet says, I just did 6 deals. I'm killing it. First of all, I have no idea what that means. And number two, why are you comparing yourself to a complete stranger? You don't even know who they are. They didn't show you any HUDs. You have no idea what their business is, and you let them ruin your day. The only person you should ever compare yourself to the person you were the day before. That's it. And you need to kick yourself in the ass if you did not get better. If you did not make more contacts, if you did not pursue leads harder, if you did not do follow-ups, you have to hold yourself accountable. Because trying to compare yourself to everyone is ridiculous. Everyone has different experience levels. You have no idea when people started. And the reality is probably half the people on the internet, probably 80 to 90% of the people are lying in one form or another. So you're making comparisons based on thoughts. So your entire outlook on life is based on a false perception of what somebody else presents. It's ridiculous. Stop comparing yourself. You should want everybody to win and use their success as motivation. That's it. Not as, oh my God, I suck. I can't do this anymore. Did you get 1% better every day? If you do, you will make amazing strides. So many of you guys are trying to compare yourself to other people. And I did this, so I'm not a hypocrite. And it's like one day I'm just like, oh my God, I am the man. The next day is like, I can't believe she did 10 more deals than I did. And here's the worst comparison you can ever. When somebody says, I did 15 deals, it means nothing to me. What is the relevance of the number? Let me ask you, if you did 15 deals, made 10 grand a deal, it's 150 grand. What if I did one deal and I made $1 million? Oh, but she did 15. She's done 15. She did 30. She did 40. It's always a brag. Here's the one truth. This is an observation. This is my opinion, Rick Ginn's opinion, nobody else's. I find people that brag about the number of deals they do, they always, there's no exception to this, have a coaching program. Take the coaching program out, you'll never hear about how many deals they do again. Because like I do quite a bit of deals, and some of the deals suck. I mean, like we just get them done to get our staff paid. It's embarrassing to me. I've had deals that made $1,000, guys. It sucks. But we've already done it. We took the profit. We move on. I personally actually take a loss on that deal, but my staff gets paid. I got deals where I made $120,000. I've had deals with a potential of $1 million that I screwed up because I didn't get enough help. The number of your deals you do will help you with your journey and understanding how to talk to people, but it will never truly design your success. What if you're doing 40 deals a month and you have no time to yourself, you have this huge staff and you're actually losing money? You're never going to see that. You're never going to see that in a live stream because that's the reality of it. I don't want to go to an office every day. I've tried that. I did that for almost 5 years and I did a lot of deals, but like the only thing I could do is tell you I did 25 deals this month. We did 30. Who cares? Honestly, I'd rather you guys do 4 or 5 deals to be profitable. I'd rather you do one smoking probate deal and crush it. Go do whatever you want in life. Remember, I'm not the guy who's going to teach you how to make the most amount of money because people who make the most amount, they're usually miserable in my opinion. But what if I could teach you how to make an incredible living, $500 to $1 million net, and do whatever you want without ever reporting to an office? To me, that's my dream. And if you want to subscribe to it, you know where I'm at. That's what I do. I've tried it every other way in 21 years, guys. Trust me, I've tried every way. I did the solopreneur for 7 years. That's why I'm so good at helping you guys, because there's nothing you haven't told me I have not personally felt. Honestly, I felt I was literally on an island for 7 years when I ran this business all by myself. I did it too long. I was naive. I was stupid. So, but here's the deal. Stop comparing yourselves with others. Only compare yourself to you and what you were the day before, because you have no idea what is going on in someone's life. And I find when people just talk about the number of deals they did, it makes no sense to me. I'm like, so honestly, here's the best. If you're going to gauge on how someone's business do is, you need the net number. And the reality, the only way you're going to get the net number is off their tax return. And 98% of the world is not going to share their tax return with you. That's why you don't see anybody showing it. Because maybe people don't tell you what they actually do. So, okay. So that is it. So we are going to jump. I'm going to do go over a couple comments in here, and then we'll jump on the live streams. If you guys got, there's a link. It's towards the top of the comments. It's under Rick Ginn. You can click that if you want to jump on the one-on-ones. And I don't care if you've never done a deal before, you're doing your 100th deal, if you want to work on it, if you want to help with game plan, let's go with it. So let me see here. You guys are talking amongst yourselves. Okay, here's a good one. So Home for Cash MA says, hey, Rick, I'm newish, but I am a Florida, Massachusetts. My last program, I was said to put buyer pays for closing costs, but your contract didn't say that. I think it's more of a seller friendly, so I'll go for yours. So here's the reality is, if you're assigning your contracts, you don't pay any closing costs, period. And the reality is everything's negotiable in real estate, but what you'll find is certain states in particular counties, like in Florida, you go from one county to the other, like they have, this is why I'm not like a fan of retail title companies. It's customary for the buyer to pay all closing costs. Not for me. And so it's all negotiable. So the reality is, if you're getting a smoking deal, like someone's giving you something 50 cents on the dollar, and they go, Rick, you got to pay the closing costs. I said, listen, I'll pay for the cost of the title company. She goes, well, I got a $500 water bill, I'm pretty sure. I go, okay, I'll pay up. And here's what I put in the addendum. I'll pay up the $500 for the water bill, because a lot of times it's four or five times that. And she goes, I haven't paid my taxes in the last year. I go, oh, so for 2022, you didn't pay it? She goes, okay. How much is that? She goes, 800. Okay. I'll put on there the tax bill of 2022 and I'll pay $500 to the water outstanding. So it's a total of $2,500 I'll pay towards the closing cost. You have to put caps on it because sometimes they lie to you or they tell you numbers that don't make sense. And honestly, if you got a great deal, you can easily pass all that stuff on to your cash buyer. They'll price the deal accordingly, but that's it. So if you're assigned a contract, you typically don't have to worry about it. Anytime it comes to closing costs, guys, it's all negotiable. Now, if I have an average deal, it's not like a huge spread, I don't offer to pay for closing costs. You don't have to offer to pay for closing costs. And here's a good part. You guys can put it in the comments. What are closing costs? Is there a standard procedure for closing costs? Because I'm going to tell you, there's not. The word closing cost is so generic, it's not determinable unless you spell it out in detail in your addendum or a separate addendum on the contract. What are closing costs? Is it just the cost of what the title company charges to close it? Is it the tax prorations? Is it the title insurance policy? I don't know. Go talk to 10 title companies. You'll get 10 different answers, I promise you. So good question though. But honestly, if you're assigning a contract, you don't have to worry about that. And by the way, if you have it where your seller's paying their normal closing costs, you should be able to get more for your assignment of contract because they don't have as many fees. And then if you're paying for the closing cost and you specify them, like I just role played with you there, you're probably getting such a deep discount and such a high assignment fee, you don't care. So just use the right contract. You got any questions? The best place, you guys, if you want to learn how to do this, is simply go over to, let me put it up here, freewholesaling.com. This is a course me and my son created. It is 100% free. Not only teach you how to get your first wholesale deal, teach you how to make your first 100 grand. And guys, I got people making over $1 million in this program. I've never charged a dime. I've had this out, I think, 3.5 years now. And everyone's like, oh, it's never going to work. Guys, go to freewholesaling.com. If you want to get started in wholesaling, you get tired of the guru, like, give me your credit card and I'll show you everything in this business. I show you everything. I don't hold one thing back. This is why I've had it out over 3.5 years. And guys, I add to it every month. When I learn a technique that works, I put it on there and make sure you take advantage. I'll leave it on the bottom here for just a minute. And so guys, listen, we're going to roll into the questions right now. Listen, make sure you subscribe to this channel. It helps other people just like you. They're trying to figure out wholesaling and get the truth of it. This is, in my opinion, one of the best places to go. You can catch me here and on my Flip with Rick, either one. Be subscribed to both of them because whatever I release on here, I don't release on there. Make sure you comment your questions below. And my God, if you enjoy this content, somebody give me a thumbs up. So let's roll into it. I have one more question here. It's a good question. Josh says, my budget is $1,000 per month. Should I SMS text blast or direct mail? Try to move away from cold calling. Honestly, $1,000 is going to be a little bit tight for direct mail. I'm not going to lie to you. So if you're okay with SMS and understand you have to convert them to phone, that should get it, but you're going to have to figure out the cost of skip tracing. Honestly, most direct mail is going to be up to $1,500 to $2,000 a month because you have to have a certain amount of volume. And guys, the price of stamps just went up again. But here's the really cool thing is it still works and it's 100% legal. So you have to give me some more information to kind of help you out with that decision. But that's my two cents on it. So let's jump on the lives on the one-on-ones. And if I call you, just make sure like you're somewhere nearby. Again, the last few ones, I've been chasing everyone down. So let's jump into this. Mike, you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now, man. How you doing?
I'm doing really good. Thanks for picking me. Thanks for everything that you do. Thanks for the free wholesaling course. It's awesome.
Okay. What can I help you out with?
My question is, I have been building rapport with a probate seller. I actually went to see the house yesterday. I'm actually having a lot of trouble coming up with an ARV and an MAO because I can't find any, like it's a real sparse area outside of town. It's rural. There's no legit comps for probably a year.
Okay.
What do you do to come up with a,
what state are we talking about here?
Pennsylvania.
It's just out in a rural area. What's the story? What's the story with the house?
The lady's mom passed away. She's the sole heir. It's not even stuck in probate anymore. And she actually listed the house on the market 2 days before she called me. And we've just been about once a week. We catch up, we talk on the phone. Yeah. I haven't made an official letter of intent or an offer. I just don't know where to be at on it. That's the problem.
Well, what are they asking for on the open market?
It started at 259. It's down to 229 right now.
How long she had on the market for?
30 days. She needs out fast. And I just...
Why does she need out fast?
It's the winter's coming. She lives 2 hours from the house. And she just doesn't want to be around for that mess.
And how big a house are we talking here?
2,100 square, 3.2, just shy of half an acre.
So what's the population of the town, like the rural area that it's surrounded by?
I mean, the closest town is probably 15,000. And it's about a mile away.
And what kind of, does it need a lot of work?
It needs quite a bit of work. It's the old generic built in 1900. Hasn't really had any significant updating probably for 40 to 50 years.
So is there any monies owed on it?
No, free and clear. There's a tax bill, about 2000 bucks, she said.
So this is a classic case where a realtor lists a property that should never, ever be on MLS.
Yeah.
And this is,
and I've talked to the realtor too.
Yeah. As long as the realtor gets paid, you know what? You're in a catch 22 because you don't know what the dang thing's worth.
Yep.
It's tough. Most likely, depending on there, I mean, I'm sure somebody would live there. They're just going to have to get a good deal to live there. So I think you got to throw the listing price out the window. I don't think it's even close. And then really it just comes down to, you've got to, when you get odd houses like this, and how much work do you think it needs dollar wise?
I was using 60 bucks a square foot. I'm thinking it's 120 grand.
That's significant money, yeah. Right there.
Yeah.
So I don't know, dude. Like it needs a low number to make it work. So when you can't figure out a comp, especially in a rural area, because this is going to be challenging no matter how you do this.
Yeah.
So I think the rules, it's going to be tough and it's going to hurt her. But if you think it needs 120, but honestly, that might be a little extreme because in a rural area, they don't go nuts fixing them up.
I think it probably is. But, you know, if somebody budgets 80, it could balloon to 100 without breaking a sweat. So
how old's the house?
It says 1900 on file. So I don't really know.
Yeah. You know, it's a tough one. I'm not going to lie to you. It's really tough.
Yeah.
Can you repurpose the house for anything?
Well,
that's the only other thing I can think. Either you try to turn it into like a multifamily or like a commercial or where like a contractor or somebody wants to store all their stuff on the property. But I don't know. I'm just taking like, sometimes you look at repurposing. I repurpose commercial all the time and turn it back into residential. I make a killing doing that. And I love that.
But would it work the other way around?
See, that's the challenge is because
getting it zoned.
Well, yeah, I mean, what's the closest structure around it?
There's a house. There's actually a house right next to it on the one side. I mean, it's pretty close, but then there's really not
in the house.
But yeah, there's somebody in that. No, not this one. No, the one next door. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever go knock on that door?
I did. And I actually, when I was out looking at the house, a dog chased me. A dog came out, ran out of the yard and chased me back into the house.
Yeah.
So they sometimes got eight dogs.
Honestly, if you can sell it to a neighbor, the only thing you're going to figure out a price is neighbors always have an idea what they want to do with something. And you're in a rural area. You don't have a lot of options here.
Yeah.
Without getting attacked by a dog, I would probably talk to a neighbor and go, listen, did you ever thought about possibly buying this house? And yeah, I would say that without having it under contract because there's no real risk here. And just, you got to find out what someone would pay for it. Let me ask you this. If you offered her 50 grand for the house, would you be scared to buy it yourself? Honestly.
Not at 50 grand. I don't think so. No.
So but you 50 plus 120, that's 170 being the thing, 180. You're going to have to offer, this is where the go for no, you're going to have to just rip the band-aids off and offer a really low number. What do you do with it? And then rehabbing, it would be a nightmare. I wouldn't want to, I would get such a low number on there and just put a long inspection period and see if you can find someone. This is always the challenge in rural areas, guys. If this was in a heavily populated area, this would be a piece of cake.
Yeah.
So you have everything right. You just might as well cut to the chase right now, because here's what's happened is, this is what I call the downward spiral. And it's not the seller's fault. They just don't understand. First of all, you could have bought that house long before the probate was even over. And who knows, if it was in a better, more populated area, it was a better condition, be a piece of cake. But now she listed it, she had 259, she's at 229 now, right?
Yep.
She's probably not even in the ballpark. Would you agree?
No, not even close.
So the next move is going to be 199.
Yep.
And then she's going to go to 179. And before you know it, she's going to be at $150. And she has no end in sight. Interest rates aren't going backwards anytime soon. They can only go up. And the economy is still in its semi-recession. We have no idea what the hell is going to happen here. And you got the dead of winter coming on. So I'd make an offer of 50 grand to see where she winds up. Like, you got nothing to lose. Like, you don't even know what the number is.
No, I don't.
So you have to be so low in case she says yes. And honestly, she says 50, don't call me and start panicking. Dude, she took it. What do I do? Because that is a real issue sometimes. Guys, I bought houses so cheap on a go for no. And then this is occasionally why I did a fix and flip. This is why I don't really do fix and flips. I only cherry pick them. Great population, ton of buyers. They all bid it up. I will buy that crap all day long. You get me out in a rural area that needs 100K plus.
Yeah.
I don't want anything to do with it because it's a huge risk. So you think I'm kidding, but I swear to you, Mike, make an offer of 50 grand and just shut your mouth.
All right.
But listen, I got to put like 150 into it. I'm going to have to survive the entire winter. And then I have to keep driving. It's like it's like almost $4 a gallon to bring my car out here.
Yep.
And that's it. But she might come back around to you and go, hey, give me 65 or something like that. Or maybe you can find someone that's very handy at fixing up houses, because I never want you to do it. and just, you can make some payments to her. Just say, listen, what if I gave you $300 a month? Give me 90 days. I'll give you $300 a month. And then I'll cash you out at, I'll cash you out $75,000 when the project's done. That's the only other way you can go with a project like this. And then you got to find somebody in town. I guarantee there's somebody in the town would love to take on that project. But a 1900s house, 60, a square, that sounds like it's got a year worth of work in it, at least.
Yeah, I figured it was an eight month project.
Plus you got the winter aspect and you got to deal with all that crap. And I'm just telling you, you have to find a way to engineer a deal out of it. And sometimes it's just no deal. So 50K, or say, listen, what if I come up with an arrangement? I will give you monthly payments and then I'll work on it. You got to give me 3 years. Because you assume it's a year, it could be 2 or 3 years. And maybe the guy wants to work on it slow. And then the guy who's working on it, I go, listen, when you're done with it, here's how much you're going to cash me out. And then you could just reverse wholesale it. But don't spend a lot of energy. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
All right.
And honestly, you have to be her last resort. If she gets someone else that pays for her, bless her heart and go, listen, I'm so happy. And if she gets someone to pay you more, let her. But the odds are they're slim to none, in my opinion.
All right.
So don't be scared to offer 50, because if you offer,
well, that's what I'm going to do.
Got to keep negotiating. You're like, Rick told me 50. Because don't worry about copying it. If you could buy it at 50, you probably make a deal and make it work. Or say, listen, are you open to a creative solution? She's like, what do you mean? Like, what if I made payments to you every month? But then you got to go find someone that wants to take on that project. And basically you engineer the financing for it. And that's how you make your money. And you'll get you'll get an upstroke payment. And then you'll get a final cash out.
All right.
So there's some people in that town that are probably really handy and they're great carpenters and they would love to do a project like that. And they go, for 50 grand, I could fix that whole thing up. Because you and me, it costs us a fortune. You know that. So, and then if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. That's it. Like, don't worry about it.
All right.
You got it, man. Awesome. Low offer. And like, honestly, the sooner you guys make an offer, the sooner you can figure stuff out. So you don't like waste your time. Sometimes some properties are not even worth comping.
All right.
Like I once bought a house, same thing, 1900s here in Florida. And I remember putting on a contract, sending a bunch of cash buyers are like, they beat the crap out of me. And I waited them all out. It took me 2.5 months, but I made $45,000. And honestly, the first month and a half, I thought I was going to I just let the deal go. Because people beat the crap out of you on those old houses. Like, it's complicated. You this. It's like, no. There's somebody always wants a deal out there. So find somebody in that town. So look up carpenters, spread the word, talk to the neighbors. And I wouldn't worry about anybody going behind your back on it. That's good, though. That's what you guys do. The only thing, Mike, that you didn't do is you should just go for the no sooner than later. Because sometimes these deals aren't worth pursuing because the sellers are so unrealistic. So she's in a downward spiral.
Yeah.
And it could take her another, at this rate, it's going to take her probably a year to figure out what number is going to work. And nobody's going to go out and get a loan on that property in today's market conditions. It's just too risky. No bank's going to give a loan on that property in that condition.
There's
if you use her stuff, for creative financing and you find a handyman or a carpenter, it might work out.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Rick. Okay.
Let me know. Update me.
Thanks.
See ya. I'm going to answer this question. I checked out the discounted postage app. Here's the best part. It didn't include the postage. It didn't include the postage. That's why it looks so cheap. So, okay, let's keep bouncing here. Ralph, you there?
Oh, yes. Hey, what's going on, Rick?
How you doing? What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
What can I help you out with?
Well, everything. Well, I just, I've been in my, not everything, but I've been in my wholesaling, journey for about a week and a half, and it's been going pretty well. I've been doing lots of cold calls. I've been being proactive. I've been doing, been following your rules, and it's been going well. I have found that I'm better at finding buyers than I am at closing. Okay. I'm still making cold calls on closing, but I'm more of doing better at JVing. I've already in that week, I've closed one deal closing another, but I'm better at finding the buyer as a JVer than I am at closing. So I'm utilizing that to get in the game, to get my feet wet and then I can, you know, really use my expertise in cold calling in the future.
That's completely normal. I was much better at working with distressed sellers, and I was terrible at dispositions, and some people the other way. Everyone has one side they favor more in the beginning. It's completely normal, and you can harvest it as long as you grow your weakness while you're doing it. I'm fine with it. Because I remember saying, I go, don't worry, one day I will figure out dispositions. And I did. And I upset a lot of people. But that was it. Like, but I was willing to trade that to like get in the trenches as much as I humanly possibly could. So when I sold the deal, I had no patience for anyone. I'm like, dude, buy it or not. Like, I was so stone cold when I worked with my cash buyers. It, you know, in my first 2 years, if you negotiated with me once, I just took you off my list. And they go, listen, do not, when Rick offers your property, just take it. But they also took advantage of me when I didn't know the price of the property. Like, okay, I'll take it. And I find out I could have got 30 grand more. Mm-hmm. And I learned after a year or two, I was like, I'm not playing this game. Like, I got to like learn to play the game. So, and by the way, I know a lot of people make plenty of money doing the dispositions. Just don't rely on it too heavily.
Yeah.
Or don't make it where it impedes that you don't ever want to deal with a motivated seller. So,
yeah, I'm trying to find the balance of both, but I'm getting a lot of people, you know, sending me JV deals and sending me and asking me, especially in Michigan and Northern New Jersey, which I'm in New York, so I have to do virtually. It's hard for me to do any
okay. Well, that's good, man.
Dollars here in New York City. So
yeah,
I'm trying.
Okay.
I feel like I'll get to that level. I have one question. I'm a NYC public school teacher. I also own a laundromat, but school is about to start in 2 weeks here in New York City, and I'll be back at work September 7th.
Yeah, started today in Florida.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
I don't have kids in school. I come from, so my wife was a longtime educator. And like her entire side of her family and all her friends. So like she still has like teachers over the house. I'm just like, it's kind of funny. I took her out of teaching. So I get a lot of crap for this. And by the way, she loves teaching. She loves kids. The school system, she could, you know, the politics of how they treat teachers is in Florida. It's a nightmare. Like, I don't know what's going on with the rest of the country, but she loves it. It just, the problem is we're losing great educators because number one, we don't take care of them. And number two, they give them so much damn work outside the kids. It's like, they don't enjoy it anymore.
100%. That's very true. I mean, they don't pay them enough. And then they pay the minimum and ask for the maximum from teachers.
Listen, my wife used to work all weekend and every year they would switch what subject she teach and what grade she did. And she was like, I'll do whatever I have to. And then as I just kind of, I go, how much are they paying you? I kind of pulled it aside. I go, and then I took one deal in wholesaling. I go, listen, if I can earn your paycheck in one shot, will you quit? She goes, I'll consider it. I was still young at this. She made me do it four times. And she goes, holy crap. But she loves teaching. I feel bad the way it goes because most people that do teaching and they get a taste of wholesaling, it usually winds up being a one-sided like show because you don't, it's just
me,
but she always loves teaching. So I told her go volunteer, but it's a challenge volunteering with her credit. Yeah. She has very high credentials. Like she did a lot of schooling, the masters. It's like, but she's offered to volunteer and you'd be surprised. They like a lot of people won't take her up on it. They're like, there's gotta be a catch. You're doing it for free. She goes, no, I truly love watching kids light up. So I don't mean to go on, but like I come from a long line of educators. And I'm always in the center of arguments with them. And I love what they do. But I grew up, to be honest with you, I grew up in a time where teachers were extremely coveted.
Mm-hmm.
Like they didn't pay for dinners when they went places. Mm-hmm. They got in the movies for free. And kids were scared to death, especially when you're around their parents. They're like, oh, God, here comes Mrs. Ginn or something like that. And they just like, nowadays, it's night and day. It's like
I remember
my wife calling parents when we were I was a lot younger. I'm just like, she goes, it's changing. And so she loves the freedom of old things. She misses teaching, And how sad is it that she offers the volunteer time? She has all the, she still has all her licenses, everything. And they're like, nah, no, no. I'm like, okay. I go, if they don't want you, go find someone that will like help you out with it. And she even did it. She even did like online for a long time. And then they kind of hammered her on that. So I tell you this because I feel your pain.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to find out a way to balance. Maybe now that you had experience, maybe you'll find a way better balance of how I will do, keep it with the school, keep it with the entrepreneurship of the laundromat, and do my cold calling of JVing and driving for dollars. How would I manage that?
Well, I know school takes up a big part of the time. Like you have to be present at least 5 days a week, right?
Yeah, so on Monday through Friday, unless the kids are off, I'll be off as well.
Okay. And then your laundromat, how many hours a week does that take up?
Not much, honestly. I just go there. I have a manager who goes and collect and and does the whole
thing. How long have you owned that business for?
8 months now is open now.
Yeah.
8 months.
So working out for you?
It is so far. It is so far. I mean, it can
always I have a friend that owns a lot of laundromats.
You know, when you own a lot, that's a different game. That's a different game when you own a lot. When you own more than three, that's it. You're in a different tier of money.
Yeah, yeah, I find sometimes the boring, mundane businesses make the most money.
Mm-hmm.
And wholesaling is no different, guys. Like, if you do it, it gets boring and mundane, and it makes a crap load of money. And that's when it gets boring, you're doing it right because you have to do the same thing over and over. And sometimes you get great results, sometimes you don't get okay. But if you keep doing it, eventually you get it. So, have you tried teaching and wholesaling before?
No, this is I literally started wholesaling about a week ago, and I'm in the summer vacation. So
I got it. Okay. Would have been great if you started a little bit earlier, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I wish. So
the reality is, what time you get home from teaching?
Around 3 p.m. And then I do my little workout. I go to the gym right after for about an hour. And then I have time. I have about 2 hours some days to do the call.
So I'm going to ask you, Ralph, do you have kids?
No, I don't. I don't.
Okay, dude, this is like a no-brainer. So you realized that for 8 months while I worked a corporate job of 70 to 80 hours a week, I wholesaled with two young children and in over my head on debt. Okay, like wholesaling was my lifeline. If it didn't work, I don't know what the hell I was going to do.
Yeah, yeah.
The reality is I was spending too much money trying to look rich. Okay, that was number one. I had to figure that out. That took me a long time. But what time do you go into work?
I leave my house about 6 in the morning. I start my day at 7:30.
Got it. So the only thing is, like, you can flex with your workout because you don't have other people really depending on you, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to flex with that a little bit and get smarter with your workouts.
Yeah.
You know exactly what I mean by that. You can... You're young enough, you can figure that part out. And it's actually good. The more you mix up your workouts, usually the better results. Because if you get workouts get boring and you got to like, you know, the funny thing, I go to three different gyms because I get so bored with the damn same gym. It's like
three.
Well, I worked the deal out with all of them. But like, so there's a gym I work out with my son. It's all the young kids. And I'm petrified when I go in this because it's all heavy lifting and stuff.
Yeah.
But I like it because it pushes me and I'm like, I don't want to fail, especially in front of my son. Although I'm iced up pretty bad, but like I can still out bench press barely because I'm a little bit bigger, but it's failing quickly. But I like it because it's like we can have whenever you can, you'll see when you ever have kids, you can work out and do things like that. And then I got, you know, the standard LA fitness. It's nice and air conditioned because it's like 100 degrees in Florida.
Bougie.
And then I got like some other like old school workout gym, like the old farts go to. And I like it because I like the camaraderie there. Like it's just.
Have you ever tried boxing? You should get into it. It's fun.
See, I love, everybody knows I love the UFC. I just, I'm enamored by contact sports. I wrestled in high school. I played football. I loved it. I wish I started jiu-jitsu when I was young.
Yeah.
I really don't want to do it right now because I already have enough joint issues. I think jiu-jitsu is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
But jiu-jitsu is a skill that's built on 10 to 15 years. And it's extremely painful the first 2 years because you have to be torqued. And I've got separated shoulders. I got, like, I'm just at an age I don't want to be ripped apart. I think boxing is amazing. I would love to find
a trainer.
I've
never
really been affiliated with someone who kind of boxes. I think
it's great.
You know, I box the bag and stuff. It's exhausting.
Yeah, it is. It's a great workout.
Yeah, I know. I'm all about it, man. Like I run every night. I do, you know, between 4 and 5 miles in like 100 degree heat, just because I like to push myself. I hate it with a passion, but to separate mind and body, you got to do stupid things. So yeah, I like to do the gym in the morning and then run in the evenings, and then I'll mix it up a little bit. But honestly, your problem's kind of easy because if you're wrapping up around 3 o'clock, you said.
Yeah, 3. I'll be home. I usually be home around 3:30.
The sweetest time slide really from like 3 to 8 to contact anybody and do appointments. So I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. You're just going to have to find out the morning, and then you're just going to have to switch up your workout. And then Saturday, you just got to go all in. I used to try to push all my appointments to Saturday. That's what I did. Like Saturday, I would see as many people as I could. And then I would have breaks. So I had a sales job. So I could take and be in the car and I could call people out, but I had to get a separate phone. I never used a work phone. I don't think it's very complicated. I think it's actually a really good thing you're doing. And you got 24 hours in a day. Just what I would do is write out a plan. That's the best way to do it.
Okay.
But the sweetest time to contact people is usually in the evenings, and that's perfect. Because in the mornings, you're not getting anywhere with anyone. So figure out how you're going to do your marketing and all that stuff and figure that out. That's the complex piece. How are you going to get your customers? Gotcha. Because I think contacting your customers towards the second part of the day is the easy part. So all you got to figure some sort of marketing that you can either kind of automate, or if you're just going to do cold calling. So you got to I know you're kind of in the beginnings of trying to figure out how you want to do it. You just got to figure your plan of action, how you want to implore it. So how are you going to market to them? What type of list are you going to go after? How are you going to contact your sellers? Direct mail, cold calling, SMS, reverse driving for dollars. And then I think your appointment stuff will be like really easy. It gets really challenging when you – I've had people with multiple jobs and like I got my kids. I'm just like, I go, sometimes I don't even know how you're going to do it. Like I'm brutally honest with people.
I got you.
Because I did it, and it wasn't easy, but – here's the thing is, all you got to do is figure out what your musts are in the day. So you must go to work. You got that. You've already committed to working out. That's great. And you got to commit to contact sellers.
So
you're going to have to figure out the marketing and the implementation part. And that's the part you got to kind of lay out a plan for. So like you lay out a teaching curriculum, what grade do you teach?
High school.
Ah, fun. Yeah. Which grade mostly? Or it's like...
Well, I'm more of a... Right now, 9th and 10th grader, but I think they're gonna put me on 10th grade today. This year, I'm gonna be teaching 10th grade English.
I remember I was in 9th grade. I was a smart ass. So
that's what I'm saying. I mean, I guess kids always, they know who to talk back to in this respect. I don't really have that problem.
I'm
a big guy. I look pretty intimidating, so I don't really have that disrespect.
Yeah. Nah, listen. When I went to school, like, I had teachers that really like they took the time, and then I had teachers that wouldn't give me the time of day.
Yeah.
Told me I would never get a job. I'd never amount to anything.
No, I won't do that.
It's I love the teachers. I think the system is really broken in America. That's just my opinion. Yeah, so
it is extremely.
But anyways, so you got to just write up a marketing plan because that's going to be the hardest part. If you want to call back in, I'm happy to go over it with you.
Awesome. I definitely will. I'm always, when you guys live, I'm always here ready to chat. So if
you know where I'm at, man.
All right. Thank you so much, Rick.
Okay, bud. I'll see you. JD, what's up?
Hi, Rick. It's really nice to meet you.
What's going on, man? What can I do for you?
I was asking, I'm really uncomfortable talking like on stream, but if you can't do it after the stream, it's all good. I can talk right now.
I'm not doing it after the stream, so you're going to do it right here.
Okay. So
I'm not going to bite you, JD. You know that, right?
Right. I just,
you know what? I give you credit for going on here, even though you don't like doing it. So what's going on? What can I help you out with?
So I started a week and a half ago, started cold calling. And so my schedule is usually from 10:30 to 7:30. Just my dial time is around 8 hours, but wow. I'm having trouble with my list.
Okay.
My list is in-state absentee owners with high equity. And I only have one motivated seller right now. Like, that's like, I'm going to follow up within a week. And so I was wondering if I could, I should stop doing that list and start doing the.
So let me ask you this. Are you doing it locally or virtually or both?
Virtually. I'm doing it in Richmond, Virginia.
Okay. Where do you live?
Texas.
Got it. What part of Texas?
I'm close to Dallas, like 40 minutes away. So,
I mean, Texas has some absolute wonderful markets, by the way.
Right.
Houston, San Antonio. I love doing business out there. But Richmond's interesting because I've done deals in Richmond. I like Richmond a lot. How did you wind up choosing that market?
So I found out like the tops. I looked at top states to invest wholesaling in, and I actually chose Richmond, Virginia, because it was a metro market and like just the areas around it were good. And then I watched one of your videos that recommended Richmond, Virginia. And so that made me, that reassured, helped me reassure myself.
I got it. So you got to start with your list first. So you already know that the challenge is doing virtual versus local, right? Mm-hmm. It's easier to get really specialized niche-less local when you go virtual. You got to take what you can get, right?
Right.
The problem with your list that you're pulling is the list you're pulling is one I did a long time ago, and it used to work. It was like the best known secret. And it's the high equity absentee owner. But guess what list is pounded more than any other list in America? It's that list. Everybody knows it. Everybody goes for it. It's just too easy of a list, in my opinion. So the question is, did you narrow down any of the parameters on the filters? Like, what are your filters on it?
My filters are the minimum year built has to be 1960, because I heard that there was like an update on houses 1960. And then the minimum square footage is 1,000. And the minimum bedrooms and bathrooms is three bedrooms, two bathrooms. And they had to own it for at least, I think they don't own more than five properties. So I think that's all I know about my, and they have like 50% or higher equity or higher.
So did you put a criteria for the number of years owned?
Let me check. Is that okay if I can check?
Yeah. It's just,
okay.
You got to have a filter on that because someone bought one last month and they're going to be on your list, and it's just going to be a waste of money or time or both.
Right. Well, let me check it. Okay. Well,
so just make sure you're doing, you're probably just overlooking it, but it's in all the freewholesaling.com. Usually at least they got on a minimum of 2 years. And usually some people put it as high as 5 years, depending on how many leads you get. And then as far as the equity filter, the lowest I would ever go is 35%, but you better know what you're doing. 50% is great, but I got to be honest with you, it depends on how many leads you want. Remember, the reason I say 35%, because if you're asking for 20 to 30% discounts, if you don't have it built in the equity, they can't give it to you. So you just waste your time. So most people start at 40, and usually the top of the line they go is 55, 60, which means if you did 40% to 100%, those are the people that be showed with that equity. So if they own a $100,000 home, that means they have 40 to as much as the full value of the home, like in cash, and they can give it to you. So here's the one thing is, I don't care if they're absentee owners or not. You know what an absentee owner qualifies them as, right?
Right.
What is it?
Well, they don't live in the property. Is that correct?
Which means they're what usually?
They're our landlords.
Yeah. So the thing is, I learned this a long time ago, like 15 years ago. Nobody cares. Like, if honestly, I prefer somebody lives in it because they'll usually give you a better deal.
Right.
Because if somebody has a house that's not working out, and say they left it and they didn't change the listing address as far as like meaning they moved, they're even more motivated to sell it. So when everybody was chasing the landlords, I go, screw it. Let me just do for 2 years. I did homeowner occupied exclusively, and I did a lot better. Now it's much more evened out. I would remove your filter on just absentee owner, and I would add home owner occupied. And then I would drop your equity filter down to like 40, 45%.
Okay.
And then try to open it up. And the other filter I want you to add on that is the figure out what the average median price is for Richmond, Virginia, and stay at or below that when you and filter. So if you get a $700,000 house, I don't want you wasting your time in that in the beginning, because you're probably not going to get a deal on that.
I did actually. Sorry.
Yeah.
I actually made my TAV like $500,000, like max, even though maybe I should change it to $400,000, because that's like.
Yeah, so remember, you know what? So you know what TAV stands for, right?
Right.
Tell us.
Total assessed value.
Yeah. Tax assessed value, technically.
Oh, yeah.
So remember, a tax assessed value is about 20% less than like the market rate. And I'm not going to get into the complexities how it does it, but they got to have a fair way to tax people. So which service are you using to pull your data?
I'm changing it as soon as possible. I'm using the PropWire, Jerry Norton.
Yeah. So listen, I don't have anything bad to say about like Jerry. He's a good guy, but you're going to get what you pay for in this stuff.
Right. Like
so I'm PropWire. Still in the beginning testing phases, and so you know data is extremely competitive. Mm-hmm. You do not play with data. Like here's the problem, guys. You can get all the data you want for free. What's your time worth? Because if you're calling 8-9 hours a day and you have bad data, you are giving away so much money. Stop worrying about it. Use the tried and true ones. ListREI.com is my favorite with PropStream. It's extreme. You know why? Because I've been using it over 6 years now. 6 years, guys. And it took me 2.5 years before I converted. And I tested the entire time because I was so hooked on ListSource with CoreLogic. And I went through a phase. I tried everyone. I will never do it again. The two premium services out there, and it's not going to change my mind. I don't own either one of them. I do have affiliates with them. And I'm the only guy that recommends two because I don't care what these companies say. And they tell me all the time, I really wish you just promote ours. No, because they're both priced. It's Batch and it's PropStream. Okay. Mm-hmm. I know Jerry has a new one coming out. I wish him the best with it, but it is untested in my opinion.
Right.
Okay. I am a wholesaler. I'm an investor. I do not do data. That's why I don't have a data company. I don't like it. That's a software company. It's not my specialty. And so I want a software guy that's backing up the data. So I already kind of know what your problem is right off the bat. Because if you guys are going to get free data, you've got to understand there is going to be a price for it somewhere. It's going to be dated. It's going to be untested. I don't know what's going on. So I think ListREI.com is the cleanest. It's the most, it's reasonably priced. You get 10,000 leads a month. And they got the best filters, and they're the only ones I know that have the pre-probate with the death certificate filter in it. And they are going to do stuff on the buyer side that I know they got coming out to help you guys even get cash buyers and won't cost you anymore. That's going to blow these other services out of the water. I don't know when it's coming out, but they're testing it. I'm just telling you, I like companies that have a phone number that you can call and they walk you through the data. And by the way, with PropStream, if you ever screw up your data, you can pick up the phone. And they'll help you and they'll actually give you a credit and let you redo it. I don't know any other company that'll do that. So I'm not, no knock on Jerry, like whatever, but I don't use PropWire. I've tested it out. It's just like all over the board. So I'm not using it. So
okay. And should I
go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Should I keep going with my list right now on PropWire, or should I change right now to PropStream? Because I'm not having a good experience with PropWire. At the moment.
Well, you already answered your question. I'm going to tell you, when it comes to wholesalers, you got to be extremely confident in your data. And if you're not, it's going to shatter your confidence.
Right.
And that's the problem. As of right now, I don't use services. Listen, you have to pay for data. There's just no exception to it because you can't compromise on the data. And you need to hold people accountable for the data, because if it's free and say you complain to the company, like it was free, what do you want? Yeah. Thank God I don't run freewholesaling.com that way, but it's just the truth. So listen, bite the bullet and move on, because what you're getting for free, it's costing you thousands of dollars from your time and energy. And if you get out of this business because you chose, guys, I've tried a lot of them. I tried Melissa Data. I've tried Listability. I've tried all this other crap. Those were even paid services and they sucked. PropStream and Batch are the only ones that hold weight in our business. Prove me otherwise. Show me otherwise. I know there's customized softwares, but you guys are going to pay. They're just too expensive. These are the best ones and they're tried and true. And plus, I've been using them approaching 6 years. So I'm just telling you, it works. So don't, and once you find something that works, don't screw with it. And if you want to get something else, you split test it. So okay. For the longest time with PropStream, for 2 years, and you can ask Zach, I guess, I bought the list source list and I brought the PropStream to see what the comparison was. And PropStream beat it and it worked out. But honestly, for 6 months when I used PropStream, I was freaking out. And you see, it shattered not my confidence. It's just hard to do something new. But remember, if you're getting something for free and then you're working for 8 hours and it's bad, it's like getting wrong directions and driving the exact opposite direction where you're supposed to be. It sucks and you got to start over. So right. Absolutely start over immediately, like no questions asked.
Okay.
It's so, and honestly, it's like 97, it's the cheapest part of your business in my opinion.
Right.
Like that, like it's, I'm not telling you to spend thousands of dollars. Like you just pay as you go. That's the only way to do it. So stop being stuck on absentee owners because it doesn't matter anymore. Open it all up. So you're going to include homeowner occupied and absentee owner. And if you go through Flip with Rick, we have tons of tutorials on how to use PropStream the correct way. So do me a favor, use my link, listrei.com, and I'll help you set up the whole thing. It's really easy. Okay. Plus, you can do your comping in there. You can organize your list. It works really well. So there's a million services, guys, and there's tons of free ones. You'll find in wholesaling, the people that truly do wholesaling today, not 5-10 years ago, they all wind up using PropStream or Batch 9 times out of 10. And I prefer PropStream. I fully admit it out loud. I just think it's a better company. They're run better, great customer service, and they're always looking to innovate and add new products.
Okay.
Batch has taken away products, but that's their choice, not mine.
All right.
So play with it. Go with PropStream. Go through the tutorials and then reanalyze. And then if you want, you can even split test them compared to PropWire to kind of see if you were going crazy or if it was the right data.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
And what list you said the list I should attack is high equity are 40% equity and above. And
well, listen, if you're going to do high equity, get rid of the absentee filter because it's got like you're going to be more frustrated. Homeowners that need to sell, they're usually much more motivated than landlords, hands down. I don't care what you say. Because everyone's attacking the landlords. They think they have gold. The other one is stop overlooking government lists, but they still work. And I know it's a pain in the butt to get them virtually, but if you can do some of the hard stuff up front, you'll get better results.
Right.
It's just the truth. So you can even start with the pre-foreclosures, which you should be able to get that data online, and then just start ripping through these departments to see which government list you can get. The government list, like I never have a problem getting deals off government list. High equity, we got to work a lot harder for it now. I still get them though. I would never do landlord only. To me, it's just too small of a data pool.
Right.
And then you play with your data and you start seeing where you get your deals from, and then you'll start identifying zones that work. Richmond's a wonderful market. I don't want everybody to go to Richmond. That's not what I'm saying. And by the way, you should also consider some of your markets a little bit closer to home too.
Okay.
I love San Antonio and Houston. Like I really do. I've always loved Houston.
Right.
Honestly, if like 3 years ago, I would have moved to Houston and opened up shop there because it's just good. Like I did a lot of JV deals there and I still do them today. So I like that market. It's just a huge population, which is still very affordable housing, but just look into it. Okay. Right.
I will definitely do that. And okay. I was actually going to have a question about the government list.
Yes.
So I was actually thinking of calling the government list, code violations, water shutoffs, fire damage properties. And I was wondering how do I get them virtually? Like, do I ask them to send an email to me?
Well, you're going to have to beg. I don't have any other word. You're going to have to find the departments to get it. You might have to send an email. You can use ChatGPT to help you write up all this stuff. And you're just going to have to shoot over the bow first. Start with an email, then step up to the phone, and sometimes even try to text the people. And if you target 8 or 9 lists and you get 1 or 2, you did a really good job virtually. That's just how it works.
And how do they send it?
I don't even get all my lists locally.
Okay. And how do they send it to me virtually?
You're going to have to, however you can get it, take it. Okay. If they mail it to you, email and a CSV file is that's the most efficient way you can get it. Some of them make you mail like a thumb drive. It's ridiculous. Some of the crap they put you through, they use it as a filtering device. Okay. So just be patient when you do it. It takes a lot of persistence to do it. And just find the list that you can get with ease. And then the other ones, you just kind of go, okay, well, and you just reattack them. And sometimes you got to let a month go by and go back and find another employee and see if you can get further with it.
Okay.
But government lists, hands down, are going to be your most, hands down, most motivated list. Unless you can find someone to do driving for dollars locally for you like that. Maybe someone to do bandit signs. But that's some of the challenges virtually. It's a little bit harder to scale in certain aspects of your marketing.
Okay. And my dad's a successful real estate investor himself. So, but he wanted me to wholesale in Fort Worth as well. So what do you think of Fort Worth?
Fort Worth?
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, yeah, I don't know a lot about that market. So I'm not going to give you my opinion on it because I haven't done my, I need you to do the research on it. And if you want to come back and we can talk about it, I don't have the stats in front of me. So I don't know.
Okay.
What are the things you need for a good real estate market? For a good wholesale market? What's the most important thing? Two most important things.
The population and the median home price.
Okay. One more thing.
Cash buyers.
There you go. If you can solve those three, that's how you find the perfect virtual market.
Right. Okay.
And by the way, why would you be nervous talking to me? You sound very confident in what you're doing.
I have no idea.
So let me ask you, how closely do you work with your dad?
Well, he's not a wholesaler. He's like, he rents stuff out and stuff like that. So,
well, tell your dad to watch the Flip with Rick show and tell him you want to partner up with him and you can sell him deals if he tacks you in on the back end.
Right.
Listen, some of the best deals, like I have guys all the time, like I'll buy the deal. I go, listen, what if I gave you your assignment fee? I helped you find funding and then you let me share and then you could just share some of the profits in the back end. They're like, great. And that's how I overcome a lot of other wholesalers. Like, you'll give me my 15 grand and I could get money on the back end. I go, yeah, done. Because before they were selling it for 10 or 12 grand and they got nothing on the back end. So okay. Make that proposition to your dad, but he's got to get deeply discounted properties, which if you're going to do what I think you're going to do, you'll have no problem finding that.
Right. And okay. I have two more questions. Is it okay if I ask?
Let's go.
So I do have a potential deal that I could probably get it. If it is the right cost or the right price, I would get like a 20K out of it. Mm-hmm. And so I have it in my CRM. Can I pull it up for a second?
Yeah, quickly, let's go.
Okay. So let's see. Okay. So her name is Joyce. And like, so the property is, well, her motivation is that she has 5 properties, which I don't know if that's a good motivation or not.
It's not the best sign because once they have 4 more properties, they're usually what we call a professional landlord.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just letting you know. I like someone who owns 1 to 3 properties because between you and me, they probably had no business owning them in the first place. And that usually ups their motivation. Once they get 4+, they get actually pretty good at what they do.
Okay. And I don't know if this is a good sign as well, but I was actually talking about a different property, but then she actually, I didn't like that. I told her that I'm not the right buyer for that property because it was already getting repaired and she didn't really need any repairs on the property. And okay. She sent me another property she has that needs repairing, and her tenants, one of them had a stroke.
Got it.
The daughter's taking care of her and they're not paying rent. So what do you think?
So here's what you need to do. She's kind of all over the board. Tell her, listen, pick one property that you really want to get rid of right now. Okay. And leave it, let her make the decision and then make an offer on that property. And that's it. And if it doesn't work on that property, you're most likely not going to get a deal on any of the others.
Right.
The odds are against you when they own 4 or more properties because they're usually seasoned. They know how to talk to people and they're going to stick with the game. One of the three properties somebody got in, they thought it was easy money in real estate. They find out tenants are a nightmare. The property got trashed. They call JD. They go, listen, I just want to get rid of this thing. That's my favorite seller. And that's the one you always want to be looking for.
Okay.
I find people that own a lot of properties, they will listen to any wholesaler's offer. Why? Because they use it as collateral against everybody.
Okay.
So here's why you go. Give me your most tired property, the one you want to get rid of now, and make an offer on it. Because the worst thing you do is when they got 10 or 25, they go, make me an offer on the entire thing. You don't want all those properties. There's some real pigs in there that aren't going to work, and there's some real winners. And they're going to set it up to where you're stuck with, you have to sell every one of them. And the last one you sell is going to be your profit margin. And if you can't sell that one, you're screwed. I've done this so many times, guys. I'm here to tell you, just tell her to pick one property, the one you really want to sell. And let me see if I can help you out. And if, because if you can't negotiate her worst property, how are you going to do her best property? Right.
Right.
That's it. Just go with that one. And don't spend all day comping it, and just use the go for no method and see if they're motivated. Odds are, 5+ properties, she's going to be a pain in the butt.
Right.
How long do you think she took to collect 5 properties? She didn't do that overnight.
No.
So try that method and simplify it. Okay.
Okay. And I actually did make an offer. So the first offer I did was 100,000. She wasn't, I went the go for no.
Yeah.
And then I did $125,000. We negotiated there, and the ARV was like 250K. Because I did some detailed comping, which took around 3 to 5 minutes, and the average, the rehab cost was like around 30K, just the estimated, because it was an average rehab.
Uh-huh.
Do you think that's a good deal, or
I don't know? You're gonna have to look into it. I mean, it sounds good on the numbers, but remember, when they own a lot of properties, they're usually pretty seasoned, and they will use you like a wet rag with your offer.
Okay.
So it all comes down to what are the real repairs? Because remember, you're doing it virtually. So it's like if you dated a girl online and you saw the picture of her and then you meet her in person, it's a completely different person. You're like, I got catfished. And right. This happens all the time in virtual. So the problem is, if you spend a lot of energy trying to figure all this crap out, how do you verify like what the real property is? That's going to be your challenge. Okay. And always is the challenge virtually, especially your first few deals.
Right.
And landlords are infamous on lying on the condition of the property.
Okay.
Because honestly, it needs 30K. It could be 50 or 70. It might not even be a deal.
All right. And I actually have a question. It's about my ADHD. I have like very strong ADHD, and I know you have ADHD.
Yeah, welcome too. To the club.
And it's a great power, but just the problem is I get like I still like maintain my focus. Like I'm still focused, but just like when my hobbies get like, they get in my head, and usually it takes like a little bit to get them out of my head, but then they come back. How do you prevent them?
So what's your hobbies?
Well, I actually created a new one. It's kind of nerdy, solving Rubik's cubes. So.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
That's one of my hobbies, and gaming, which.
The problem with ADHD, it's all about focus. So the superpower of someone with ADHD, when you focus on something, you're really good at it.
Right.
Really good. The problem, you give them 4 or 5 balls, it's a freaking disaster.
Right.
So like they all get screwed up. And it's like, I mean, I had like a crazy day the other day. It was like, I did something so stupid, and it's not the end of the world, but it was, you know, like I hit something because I was in a rush. I was like, my wife's trying to tell me this thing. There's lightning coming down. It's like pouring like a monsoon. We needed to get somewhere. I had to go back in the house to get some. So I backed the car up, and like I hit something, like an object that wasn't even moving. And I just got this car. I'm like, how? And then I started beating myself up. And that's what ADHD does to you. Like you get distracted, and then you start going all over the place, and you lose complete focus. So whenever I come to my business, I singular focus on one thing at a time, and I don't let anything else in. And I lock it down, and so my wife knows when I do this, like that's all I do. If somebody comes in while I'm shooting this live stream, I'm done. Like I'm like all over the board and I get off topic. So you have to find a way to get your focus in and just keep it in a narrow focus and not let it out. And understand when you do it, really powerful things work. The problem with ADHD is you want to get everything done, and like you're really good at doing that, then you start thinking about the five or six other things you got to do. And that's what like takes me out when I do that. And so I've learned with delegation and time, and I don't beat myself up, and I'm old enough. I've been to enough funerals. I've been through enough tragedy in my life. Dude, life's short. ADHD is really all inside of here. It's not a diagnosis. It's just the way you kind of live. Okay. And the problem is most people don't understand how we operate. I find most ADHD people are very compassionate, loving people, but we get excited. We get really excited and charged up about it. But just as much as we get excited, we can like drop down. And right. That's where you have to balance it out. You just like, you can't get down on yourself and okay. You do stupid things. You're going to do stupid things.
Right.
So like narrow focuses and you find a schedule. So I always find, so I have to write a lot of content for this show and all the other stuff I do. So I do like 2 and 3 hour blocks and I make sure nobody messes with me.
Right.
To the point, I put my phone on silent and I just push it away. You have to call me 5 times if I'm going to answer it, and it better okay. be good. And so just create rules. And after a while, after you keep violating the rules a certain amount of times, you'll figure out, okay, this is how I'm going to do this.
Okay. Well,
and that's it. And I constantly need a new environment. I constantly have a new studio when I do this stuff. I constantly go to new gyms. I constantly go to new fishing places. That's just how I am. So wholesaling is perfect for me because I deal with a lot of people. My problem with wholesaling is once I get a deal, I'm bored out of my mind. Like once I have it under contract, I just move on because I don't want to deal with the details. I never did as a wholesaler. And right. So now I have people to help me do all that stuff. And that's why I had no interest in dispositions when I did wholesaling, and I give away a lot of money.
Okay.
So just, you have to mitigate as much as a superpower, it has a downside too. And right. Drugs isn't going to fix it. Alcohol ain't going to fix it. You have to self-manage it and figure it out. And then the people closest to you, just tell them how you think and operate, and they'll help you with it.
Okay.
And sometimes they're like, what is your problem? Like, I'm just having one of those moments. And listen, everybody's got some sort of condition, if you want to admit it or not. ADHD, when you focus it, I can sit here and do 9 or 10 wholesale deals in like an hour or two. That's how good I am at it. And I love it. And so mypeeper.com is one of my greatest assets. So just learn it. How old are you?
17.
Yeah. So dude, I didn't even know I had it till I was 40. So just to let you know, I didn't even understand it.
Right.
Now that I understand it, but I don't read too much shit on the internet because I don't care how other people do it. I just deal with like how I deal with it. I just know I get really excited about a deal and I go strong with passion. I don't stop till I get it. Okay. That's my superpower. And when deals fall apart and people give me a difficult time, it's a bit of a problem for me, and I have other people help me out with it. So right. I'm extremely compassionate, empathetic, and that's what makes me such a powerful wholesaler. And that's the skill set I teach to all of you. So it is a superpower. So figure out how to harvest your ADHD and then find hobbies that will help you fulfill it, like whatever it is to keep you busy. And that's, and then you just, I got to be worn out when I go to bed. That's why I run 5 miles a day. It's ridiculous. I'm 53. I shouldn't be running that far.
That's yeah, I can't run 5 miles. So
dude, I couldn't run a quarter of a mile. I just figured out how to do it. So I like to eat. So I like to keep the weight off. So,
right.
Okay, JD, update me. Let me know what's going on, man.
Right now, like as in today?
No. The next live stream, because I spent like 15 minutes with you and I got to run.
Okay.
Okay. So you like me, you go on forever. And I appreciate that, but I'm recognizing it too.
Right.
Okay. And spend some time with your dad. He knows the business well. Find okay. the synergies you already have there. You're 17. Your dad's got a lot of wisdom. I get it. Sometimes working family is not the easiest thing in the world. Me and my son was never a given. It just happened.
Exactly. Right.
It happened. It was just a perfect opportunity. So try it out. Sometimes it's not easy working with your father, as Zach will tell you.
Right. I have one more question. That's it.
Chief, I got to cut you off. I'm sorry, man.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
So I can talk all day. I love JD's ADHD. Like, but one more question is going to be 5 more questions. And I'm already in overtime on the stream. So guys, listen, if you got value from the stream, do me a favor. Make sure that you are subscribed to this channel. It makes a huge difference. Share it with people you know who are getting started in the wholesaling journey. I want to make sure you guys get the truth. I want to make sure you not only get your first deal, but you're wildly successful at this. And if you guys want to learn more about this business, go to freewholesaling.com. Also keep in mind, if you want more of Rick and working with someone like me and Zach, you can actually JV with us, sellmypaper.com, or you can join us at Flip with Rick Plus. That's free for people who do JVs with us. We always have an opportunity for everyone to work with us. And we're having a live event October 19th, 20th for the Flip with Rick Plus students. Check us out there, guys. And that's it. We'll see you. Zach will be on tomorrow, I believe, 1 p.m. Eastern time on the Flip with Rick channel. And I'll see you guys soon. Have a good one. Later.